From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was recently made in a maternity ward in a local hospital. Just moments ago, a baby was born. And in the midst of the maelstrom of new life, the parents have to make a decision. Who's going back to work? And when? What is allowed by their employers? Can they make up for lost income if at least one parent stops working? Around the world, paid parental leave is pretty common. In this country, it is not. Three states now mandate paid maternity leave, and other states, including New York, are looking at various forms of paid leave. Depending on where you are in the country, paid leave could be for mothers only, could be for workers who need to take time off to care for a new child, a sick child, or even an elderly relative. There's a lot of variation. What would paid leave look like in New York State? Well, we're going to be talking about that this hour, and how would it be paid for? We'll talk about that as well. So throughout this hour, we're going to hear from a number of voices, and I'll welcome our first guest in studio. It's Amy Collins. Amy is the CEO of New Shelves Books, and it's nice to have you here in studio. You're someone with a company that has been, well, not in Rochester. You moved the business to Rochester when, Amy?
Moved to Rochester a year ago, but we've been in Albany in New York State since 2008.
Okay, so it's great to have you here. Thanks for taking the time. And how did you get involved with the question on paid leave?
Citizens Action, Main Street, these are some organizations that I believe in and that I've been working with. And I've been doing some work on the Fight for 15 as well. And paid family leave is something that I believe in. It's something I offer to my employees already. And it's something that I think we should move forward for, and legislatively we're trying to, so I wanted to help.
Okay, so let me also say to our listeners that this is just one of those days close to a holiday where a lot of people are traveling. We had reached out to a number of different business groups, NFIB, National Federation of Independent Businesses, Unshackle Upstate, among others, and they, everyone was traveling today. In fact, we had some commitments from a couple of people who called this morning to say, sorry, it turns out we're going to be on the road, can't get there. So, but you're going to hear an interview coming up a little bit later this hour with the executive director of Unshackle Upstate. That is a pro-business group based in Rochester, but doing work across New York State. And they oppose most of the forms that have been proposed, at least in New York State. You're going to hear why coming up. But Amy Collins is here as the CEO of New Shelves Books to help illustrate as well. We shouldn't talk about the business community monolithically opposing paid leave, right?
That's true. That quite a few small businesses actually are for this.
Okay. And why have you offered it? You have said that you've already offered paid leave for your employees, yes?
Yes. I'm one of those people who has fewer than 50 employees, and having people out is a huge stress on my business. But I believe that if my company is to survive, my employees, they are my main source of income, and I need to treat them as such. And so when they have to be out for a sick child or when they need a couple weeks off, then that is the least I can do.
Okay. I also want to bring in on the phone Marisa Lagos, who is joining us as a reporter on California politics and government from KQED on the West Coast, and she's on the line with us now as well. Marisa, how are you?
I'm great. Good to be here.
Well, thank you for taking the time for us as well. And, you know, I wanted to bring you in from one of our NPR member stations on the West Coast because, as we were just talking about here, New York State's bill is not going to be exactly the same as New Jersey or Rhode Island or California or Connecticut. Every state's a little bit different in terms of the payment mechanisms and what's covered and what's not. But California is a state that has moved on paid leave. And Marisa, can you kind of just give us a little bit of the recent history of that?
Yeah, so California, you know, like everyone in the nation, there's some job protections around leaving to care for a family member, a new child, whatever. But several years ago, California enacted a law that allows, on top of disability leave for maybe if you actually had the baby, up to 6 weeks of paid family leave anytime in the first year after a child is born or when a family member is sick. And that's for both men and women. And it's funded through the same mechanism as our disability taxes. So employees pay into this through their payroll taxes. And, you know, they can draw about 55% of their salary while they're out on leave. Their jobs are protected through federal law. There was actually a proposal this year in the legislature that has not moved but could come back next year to extend that up to, well, it was 10 weeks, and then they bumped it down to 8. And one of the interesting things about California's disability law, I don't know if this is the same elsewhere, but there's this gap between the first week of when you go on either of these leaves, disability or paid family leave, that you have to take vacation or sick time or take it unpaid. That would have eliminated that gap. And the proposal here would have also extended this so that folks who are really on the margins when it comes to their income would get more than 55% of their income.
Marisa, there is, I think at least a consistency across this country, no matter where you are, when it comes to these bills that have been proposed in various states, we often hear, I don't want to overgeneralize, but some business leaders say, yeah, if this happens, we can't afford it, we will hire less. And, you know, let me see if I can give you an example. Connecticut in 2012 began with a new law on paid leave, and there was a pro-business group that took a survey in Connecticut. 156 businesses in Connecticut responded to the survey about halfway through 2012, and 31 of the 156 businesses, so about a fifth, had already scaled back on employee benefits or reduced their own paid leave or both to account for the cost of the new law. 12 had cut back employee hours. Another 6 reduced employee wages. 19 businesses raised consumer prices. 6 laid off employees. 16 Connecticut businesses indicated they had decided to limit or restrict their expansion within the state. And 38 Connecticut businesses said that they would hire fewer people as a consequence of that new law. And other actions included offering fewer raises, scaling back on overtime, and again, raising prices. So that's one state and one sort of a slice of what was predicted. You know, less hiring, more right, cutbacks, higher prices, et cetera. Were the same kind of prognostications made in some sectors of the California business community?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's why that bill I just referenced didn't make it out of the legislature. On the flip side, most studies done in California since our Paid Family Leave Act went into effect hasn't shown a significant impact on business or the economy. I mean, I don't think you can't argue, whatever side of this you're on, that there's no cost to this. I think sometimes, actually, the more difficult thing for smaller businesses, which your other guests mentioned, is filling those roles while somebody's gone. You know, the employees in California at least pay into this themselves. So it's not really a cost to employers in that sense. But yeah, filling somebody's job, keeping it open is difficult. I don't think that a lot of the concerns have come to pass here. But certainly for small businesses, it can be tough. You know, on the flip side, you also find people who are happier or probably better employees might be more likely to stick with the company if they have these types of options. And especially people who on the low income side. I mean, one of the interesting things I've read recently about sort of how our laws played out here is that people who make over $75,000 are more likely to take advantage of it than people who make far less. So that's one of the problems, is that I think if you're already an hourly employee, you know, if you're working in a job that schedules things differently, it's harder for both the employer and employee to sort of fit this into their schedule.
And it may seem obvious, but I don't want to make any assumptions. So why is it that employees who make less are less likely to take advantage, Marisa?
I think it's a matter of both education about the law. I mean, I have a kid at home. I'm actually pregnant with my second, so I am intimately involved with dealing with this system, and it is so confusing. I mean, you sit down, and my last HR department gave me a chart that had, like, 6 different bands of color showing my rights and, you know, under federal law and state law. There's a lot of forms you have to fill out, and I think that, like a lot of, you know, family leave, gender equality laws, a lot of workers' rights laws, just because they're on the books doesn't mean that people fully trust that they can take advantage of them and not, you know, and keep their job or at least not, you know, lose some sort of standing in their workplace. So, again, I think if you're on the margins, that's an even harder decision to make. And because if you're only making 55% of your salary and you make 20 grand a year, how do you really make ends meet?
Sure, sure. Listeners, if you've got comments or questions on paid leave, paid family leave, what's out there now, what New York State's considering, maybe if you're curious how it's working in other states like California, which is why we've got Marisa Lagos on the phone with us, a reporter on California politics and government for KQED, you can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994 if you're right here in Rochester. Amy Collins, CEO of New Shelves Books, You have said you don't think we can afford not to have paid leave. So flesh that out for me a little bit more. Why do you put it in those terms?
Right now, paid leave, as is put forth into and has passed the Assembly, is an insurance program that will allow me as a small business to, my employees will be able to draw on that, which will free up some cash for me that when they go out, my other employees can either be paid overtime or I can bring other people in either on a temporary basis or on a contract basis. I am already faced with having employees who are having children. I already have employees with sick children. Whether or not they need to take time off, that's already sailed. That's done. They're taking time off. What I'm saying is this insurance program will allow them to get some money back in an insurance program while they're off and will allow me to pay their replacements.
Okay. Here's a statement from State Senator Rich Funke, and I contacted his office this morning because, as you just heard Amy mention, the New York State Assembly has passed a paid leave bill. It has not gotten really anywhere in the New York State Senate. And his office, Senator Funke's office, told me that, well, that's because they have a separate bill in the Senate that they prefer, very different than the Assembly. And here is the statement from Rich Funke's office. Quote, Rich supports paid family leave in concept and is optimistic it will be up for discussion in the 2016 legislative session. However, like much of what Albany does, the devil will be in the details. Rich is open to a model that would be primarily employee funded and would not force taxpayers or employers to carry the bulk of the cost. Bloomberg reported this morning via census data that more residents are leaving New York State than any other state, and we know tax climate is often a major factor in a resident's or an employer's decision to relocate. Making upstate more affordable for both families and businesses is one of Senator Funke's top priorities. That effort starts by not placing additional costs onto the backs of taxpayers. Amy, what do you make of that?
The costs that we're talking about are minimal, and disability is already shared between businesses and employees. We are talking about just adding an element to disability insurance, and it is a very small amount. Yes, it is 45 cents by employees now, shared, and then also with employers, and that will be going up over 3 years.
45 cents per
week.
Per week.
Per pay period per week. And there are other plans in place. And as long as we're keeping the discussion open and as long as we're moving forward, both legislatively and socially, that is what we are supporting. This is a program that we believe needs to have happen.
And go ahead, Marisa. Yep.
You know, I just think this is interesting because we've had a lot of talk over tax climates and regulations in California and whether it drives business. And there was a big story recently about how one big company that moved out of California went for affordable housing. So sort of this idea of the social safety net not being adequate in really expensive states like New York and California is actually sometimes, on the flip side, what motivates employers. So I think that has to be balanced. And I think in the states where this has happened, we've seen that if business comes to the table and can really sort of work out solutions, that there are options out there that are feasible for everybody.
Well, we have a number of comments coming in online, and Brad just says, this has to be limited just to maternity leave. The broader you make paid leave, the more you open it up for abuse. That's exactly a question that you will hear me ask Greg Barilla later this hour, the executive director of Unshackle Upstate. Brad is writing to the program and saying he thinks we've got to limit it. Amy Collins, should we limit it to just maternity leave, paid leave for new moms, as opposed to paid leave for, again, caring for a sick child, caring for a sick relative, perhaps an elderly relative. We just talked about Alzheimer's on the program last hour. You know, should we narrow the scope of paid leave to make sure it's not abused?
Narrowing the scope of paid leave so that in the future it is not potentially taken advantage of doesn't, to me, that's not a good reason to narrow the scope. Right now, as it's put forth in the Assembly, we are talking about, yes, both men and women being able to be covered for maternity, whether that's foster care, children, adoption, naturally born children. Yes, taking care of elderly parents and sick children. And narrowing the scope at this point, narrower than that, so that it's not taken advantage of. Sick children need to be taken care of. A parent needs to stay home. We do not have, as your other guest was saying, we do not have the social systems in place to take care of the elderly the way we'd like to take care of sick children. It falls on the parents, and parents are working today.
Okay. Marisa, what do you make of one of our listeners just being concerned about it being abused? Has that been brought up in California?
You know, I haven't heard a lot of talk of that, and I think that the mechanisms, again, for filing for these types of claims are really intensive. I don't think it's definitely not part of the social safety net that you hear a lot of concern about abuse. And quite frankly, even with other welfare programs, I don't know if you'd call this a welfare program since employees are playing into it, but, you know, a lot of the claims about abuse are usually overstated when you actually look at the studies. I mean, I think on the other side of that, we have an aging population, as you mentioned. We have, you know, less options when it comes to people who are mentally ill, people who are sick, people who are aging. And so economically, on a broad scale, I think there's an argument that this could actually help a state to have these sorts of safety nets in place so that people do have their jobs. I mean, if you lose your job when your family member is ill and you're trying to pay those medical bills, you're probably going to go and need to ask for more help from taxpayers on the other side. So,
all right, Tim on Twitter is just asking about some of what he thinks could be a subjective nature of this. He says, no birth and newborn is the same, so how long should the employer cover it? And who would get to determine what is reasonable for a new parent? So, Amy, again, why don't you remind our listeners, you know, Tim is saying, hey, you know, some care situations are more intensive than others. What should employers cover? What should be covered?
The Federal Family Leave Act right now, which gives up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave, is the same limit of time that the New York Assembly recently has passed. We are asking for 12 weeks. Now, is that enough? In some cases, Tim is right. It won't be enough. In some cases, it's far more than is needed. But that's where we're starting, up to 12 weeks.
Up to 12 weeks. And up to 12 weeks for a newborn, up to 12 weeks in other circumstances,
yes.
Scenarios?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Marisa Lagos, just remind us again, in California, it's what amount of time?
It's basically 12 weeks when you add disability for maternity leave with paid family leave, but paid family leave here for something other than a birth is actually only 6 weeks. But again, the nice thing about that is that you can, as with New York with a more generous policy, a father can take that. So what I've seen a lot of families do is, you know, the mom takes off 3 or 4 months, goes back to work, and then the dad can take a month or two off and stay home, bond with the kid, and also help offset some of the child care costs, which are really expensive at the beginning.
Right on cue, Marisa. Tom writes to us and says, we hear a lot about maternity. Is anyone talking about paternity as part of this paid leave? So, Marisa?
Yeah, they are. And I think, you know, one thing that I would say that beyond the sort of just laws and protections that from a legal perspective is what's the culture? There's been a lot of talk in California around this issue of maternity and paternity leave, because there's a lot of tech companies who are actually going above and beyond state law and saying, we're going to pay you your full salary to stay out if you want to, sometimes up to a full year. My question has been, can people really do that, especially dads? Is it culturally accepted, even if it's offered? And so, I mean, I know that's kind of getting into a whole other conversation, but I do think that, again, even with these legal protections and payment, sometimes it's still hard to take this time off work depending on what you do.
What do you think about fathers, Amy Collins?
I think they absolutely should be covered. I think in our society, it's way past time that we offer them the same protections that we offer mothers.
We're also seeing some listeners comment on values. You know, we had a number of people on Twitter say, forget who pays for it. What do we value as a country? And here's an email from Judith. Judith writes, on family leave, I feel that the young people becoming parents will be the catalyst for change on this. From my observations, fathers today are much more involved with caring for their children starting at birth. I do not consider family leave policy in the U.S. as family-friendly at all. The first years of life are the most important for a child's development. Amy Collins?
And it's not just, we're not just talking about parental leave as well. Keep in mind that we're also talking about taking care of elderly parents. My partner is the only family member of, his mother has deep Alzheimer's, and just as your first hour, she suffers from Alzheimer's. My partner, he is her primary caregiver. This is not just for women who are pregnant or who are having babies. This is for families. This is family leave. This is for people who have family issues to deal with that cannot be compensated for otherwise.
All right. Marisa Lagos had that. I imagine in California, that part of the question has to come up. It always comes up. The question on who are we as a country? What do we value? And shouldn't we make this work? And I suppose that was part of the debate there as well.
It was, although, you know, what's interesting is This bill kind of died quietly this year in the legislature. It passed both houses, got amended in the Senate, and then came back to the Assembly and just didn't go anywhere. So it was definitely one of those bills that it seemed like leadership sort of shuffled aside quietly and didn't want to answer a lot of questions about, which I think speaks to this debate. You know, and again, this has been framed here in some ways around not an issue of affordability, but at one of gender equality, which I think, to Amy's point, we should be talking more about. This isn't just about new parents, which is very important, clearly, but that we as a society will bear the cost if people can't take care of their family members when they're ailing.
Okay, a couple more emails coming. We're getting a flood of emails and comments on Twitter, but it's easier for me if our listeners just call the program. Feel free to call the program. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI right here in Rochester, 263-9994. Should we have paid leave, paid family leave, paid maternity leave? Should we narrow it? Should we make it broader and more available to help care for sick family members, et cetera? And Bridget Hurley is a policy analyst for the Children's Agenda in Rochester, and she just emailed me the following. She said, Evan, paid family leave is better for families, and it's also better for employers and taxpayers. And she links to a New York Times article from January of 2015, so just about a year old. And this is the quote from the New York Times article. Quote, in New Jersey, in the year after giving birth, women who take paid leave have been about 40% less likely to receive public aid or food stamps, a Rutgers study commissioned by the National Partnership for Women and Families found. Women who took leave and returned to their jobs worked 15 to 20% more hours during the second year of their child's life than those who did not take leave, and their hourly wages increased about 5%. So the New York Times story that Ms. Hurley is linking to is indicating that the outcomes might be better for everybody. So Marisa Lagos from KQED, when do we start seeing, or I think you've mentioned that we're starting to see enough on the research and results side in California to draw some conclusions, but, you know, are we going to feel better in 5 or 10 years that we've got a handle on what paid leave means for everybody involved?
I think so, and I think with a lot of these policies, what you see is a lot of resistance and concern that the sky is falling when they're first considered or enacted, and then not a lot of discussion about them later because the sky doesn't indeed fall. So I think we'll continue to see research out of academic institutions looking at this. Some of the problems sometimes can be that whoever takes it up is seen as being biased towards one side or the other. So I think what is really needed is objective research. But I can't think of any proposals in recent years to roll back these provisions. The only conversation has been to expand them because I think there's been a lot of agreement that, in large part, they've worked.
Okay. Amy Collins?
I just wanted to mention that New York State went through this earlier, a few decades ago, when we were rolling out long-term disability. Long-term disability had the exact same arguments, that it would be too onerous on small businesses, that people would take advantage. That did not. The sky is falling is exactly, I love that phrase. Yes, that is indeed. But over time, over history, be it safety laws in the United States or in New York State, short-term disability, long-term disability, these things that were enacted to benefit the business and the employees, in the end, we've turned around and realized they were the right thing to do. This is going to happen, I believe, also with this.
All right, so a couple more comments before we let Marisa Lagos go. Real quick here, because these will show just how split the audience can be on an issue like this. Jeff emails the program and says, Evan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it wasn't that long ago in California that if you simply got sick and missed a day of work, you could lose your job, that there were no protections in paid leave. Forget having a child. How about having a cough? And that's one reason that more states are looking at protecting workers. Marisa Lagos, any truth to that?
Yeah, and I mean, I think if you look even with the fact that federal law doesn't pay for any of this leave, we do have a lot of protections now that didn't exist a few decades ago, I think, sort of recognizing some of that. And again, you know, I think there's the issue of the pay, and then there's the issue of the culture and whether it's appropriate. I mean, I still see people coming to work sick all the time at some places. So it's a conversation that I think is ongoing, but I do think that it's something that again, it's hard for small businesses, but I'm seeing a lot of larger businesses embrace the philosophy behind these policies and that they do lead to worker retention and healthier and happier workers, which ultimately can benefit your business.
Okay, and then Allison writes to us and says, Evan, sorry, I have to disagree. I am a mother. I am also a business owner myself. And she says, a long email, hold on 1 second. Allison says she just wants to say that she doesn't think that the law as written in New York State would be fair, because who would get to decide what kind of illness or sickness is worth 12 weeks out? And Allison essentially says, we're talking about a lot of time and a lot of missed work, and it would be very, very subjective. You'd have all kinds of claims in employment law on, you know, whether there would be a justified illness that, you know, would allow an employee to be out and to utilize this program, and it is way too broad. So, Amy Collins, what would you say to that point?
We already have a number of these policies and procedures in place with disability. This is an addition to disability. And if we can do it for the employee taking time off for disability, we can also handle it if it's a family member.
Okay. Marisa Lago, some final thoughts from you as we talk about it in New York State. Again, as we've said, every state is different when it comes to how paid leave is going to work. And I know your position is just taking a look at the evidence. That's your job. So just remind our listeners so far in California what the evidence is saying about paid leave.
Yeah, I mean, so far in California, we have one of the nation's most generous, about 6 weeks, and it seems to be working. And I think that the same protections that exist, as Amy mentioned, here for, you know, disability or caring for a family member, you need a doctor's notes. There's proof that needs to go along with it. I don't think the administrative costs have been that onerous. So what we have in place here seems to be working, and I think it's something that policymakers are going to continue to push to expand.
Marisa, thanks for taking the time for our program today from the West Coast, and I appreciate your work. It's been our producer, Megan Mack, and I have been looking for the way this is covered in a lot of states, and I know you've been doing excellent work on this. So thanks for taking the time for this program.
My pleasure. Happy holidays. Thanks for having me.
And you too. Marisa Lagos, KQED. Short break. We're coming back, and you're going to hear from the executive director. That's his title. He's the executive director of Unshackle Upstate. Greg Brill is going to join us, and he's going to tell us why Unshackle Upstate is concerned with the direction of some of these proposals for paid leave in New York State. That and your phone calls next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our next Connections will be Monday. Just want to let you know that we've got special national programming coming your way, some great storytelling on Thursday and Friday in these hours, and then Connections returns live on Monday. So if you celebrate Christmas, we hope you have a very Merry Christmas this week, and we'll be glad to talk to you right back here on Monday.
Going away for college involves decisions that cost big money these days, but it's money that students hope will have a payoff.
We're at my new school, American Academy of Dramatic Arts, the New York campus.
We're at the Clive Davis Institute of Recorded Music at NYU.
Two young artists betting on their educations later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're talking about paid leave, which has become a hot topic in this state with some events around New York State. And as we move toward a legislative session, a question on whether it moves forward. The New York State Assembly has passed a paid leave bill, but it has not passed the Senate. There is a separate bill in the Senate that is, it has some differences, but I'm not sure that there is the appetite in the Senate and the Assembly to get them together, but we'll see. That's part of why this debate is happening and these discussions are happening. Right now, three states in this country mandate paid maternity leave, and that's California, New Jersey, and Rhode Island. But a number of other states have looked at various forms of paid leave, and we're going to see what happens in New York State going forward. Now, my guest in studio is Amy Collins, who is the CEO of New Shelves Books. It's a small business. How many employees, Amy?
We just have 4 employees at this point, only 1 full-time.
Yeah.
Two full-time.
A small business, and most of the time when we hear about the impact of paid leave and the concern in the business community, and small businesses like yours, that we're not sure that small businesses can handle this, especially if you've got 4 employees and you have a new mom who needs to be out for 12 weeks, how do you survive? And that's a lot of the rhetoric we hear. What do you say to that?
Well, it's a small business also in the publishing industry, which is not high growth. I mean, we're right on the edge, just like many small businesses. If we hear a lot about the tech businesses out in California and some tech businesses in the Atlanta area that are offering up to a year of paid family leave. Small businesses cannot afford that, especially a business like mine. So an insurance fund like the one being proposed in New York would be a huge help.
All right. So in this case, this bill that passed the assembly, we're not going to get down into the details of every line of the bill, but a lot of the confusion has been who pays for it. A lot of the opposition has been you got to protect taxpayers and you have to protect employers, that employers like you, Amy, can't be forced to pay all of it or most of it. So what's the model here? What do you think can work?
Unlike what is getting out there in the press, this is not a proposal that insists that taxpayers foot the bill for this. This is an insurance fund that employers and employees will pay into a small amount every week. And just like any other insurance fund, that money will be invested, the money will grow, and as it's needed, it will be drawn from. But new investments will be made every week. New input will be made every week. This will become a self-sustaining fund, the way any good insurance fund is run.
45 cents a week?
To start. I'm not saying it won't go up. It will go up to a few dollars a week per employee and per employer. It is shared. It is small. It is worth it. And it is not going to fall on the back of the taxpayers at all.
Is it a small enough for you as an employer that it is not going to harm your ability, not just to maintain a workforce, but, you know, for example, I went back to that Connecticut survey, and their business community was warning that you're going to see higher prices, you're going to see less growth. Even if you see a status quo in terms of employees, you won't see as much growth, you won't see as much expansion. And for you, you don't think so?
I don't. Am I Kreskin? No. But I can look back on history. I can't look forward, but I can look back on history and say that those are the same complaints that are raised every time there tries to be some sort of legislative benefit to employees, whether it's
minimum wage.
Minimum wage, yes. And again, as I mentioned before, safety laws, other insurance plans. This is an insurance plan. This is not going to bankrupt the businesses. If I can afford it, I promise you, I'm sure most of the others can.
All right. Well, we're going to hear now from Greg Barilla, because a number of the groups, the organizations that represent businesses, obviously not all, and that's not what we want to frame it as, but there are a number of organizations, business organizations, that do oppose most of these paid leave proposals in New York State and around the country. That has been the case around the country. And we've reached out to essentially all of them today. It's 2 days to Christmas, and just about everybody's traveling. Amy and I are not traveling, but everybody else is. But some have sent statements, the National Federation of Independent Businesses, et cetera. And Greg Brill is the executive director of Unshackle Upstate. They're a pro-business group that seeks to support economic development and a low-tax climate. Greg's also traveling today. But he was able to talk to me this morning by phone about why Unshackle Upstate has opposed most of the forms of paid leave that have been proposed in New York State. Greg, welcome back to the program. Thanks for taking the time for us.
Thank you, Evan.
Well, let me just start with where your organization stands on paid leave. Obviously, it means different things in different states. New York has this proposal. What does Unshackle Upstate feel about this issue?
Well, I think to start, we should be clear. In concept, I think everybody would like to see women who have maternity leave or families with sick relatives, everybody would like to see them be able to keep their jobs and care for those individuals in those situations. The problem is, with any mandate on business in New York State, there's consequences and costs to that, and those realities have to be considered. In New York State, we, generally speaking, have two competing proposals. We have the Senate proposal, which relies heavily on taxpayer dollars to fund the program. And we have the Assembly proposal, which, in my opinion, has been far more, is the proposal the advocates support more than the Senate proposal. That imposes a one-size-fits-all mandate across all employer types, all occupational situations, and really has no consideration for small business, no consideration for unique employment situations in New York State. And that would be funded through essentially a payroll tax on all workers.
One of the arguments in favor of that says, well, that payroll tax, though, it's like an insurance. You pay in, and that way it protects the employer from having to, you know, to deal with all of the cost, and it's more equitable that way. What do you think?
It's not that simple, particularly in the Assembly proposal. And that's the Assembly proposal is offered by Kathy Nolan out of Queens, I believe. She also, in that bill, calls for a massive expansion of the traditional temporary disability insurance. And in that expansion, we're talking a quadrupling of costs largely borne by employers to the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Is there a model that makes enough sense that Unshackle could eventually support it?
I think back to my original point that this is something that I think, in concept, a lot of different groups support. I think what we want to see is some sort of system where expecting or mothers who have just delivered a child or workers with sick or injured family members do have an opportunity to care for them. I think tax credits given to small businesses and medium-sized employers to craft their own paid leave policies would work better than a one-size-fits-all mandate from New York State. I also think at the federal level and in New Jersey, which has a six-week program, you've at least seen some carve-outs for small employers under 25 or 50 employees. I don't know that a perfect model exists, but I think there's certainly better options to discuss than what we've seen, particularly out of the Assembly, which is a one-size-fits-all model, and out of the Senate, which really creates a state-funded entitlement that taxpayers are responsible for year in, year out.
Greg, in some places with the debate about paid leave, you know, we hear a lot about paid family leave or paid maternity leave, but in some cases it is broader than that. It is paid leave for caring for a sick relative, an elderly relative, paid leave to cover an employee for time off, et cetera. Are you worried that when we get beyond maternity leave, it could be abused, or should it get beyond maternity leave and cover caring for other sick family members, et cetera?
Well, I don't think we've come up with any sort of understanding or discussion that's agreed upon by all impacted parties to this point. So before we begin expanding it to family leave for sick relatives, which in some states that's gone to include in-laws and uncles and aunts, and where does that line end? I think in New York State, it's probably better to focus on maternity leave at the moment and see if some sort of solution cannot be, discussions cannot continue that are productive, that we are able to craft some sort of system that doesn't continue to hold back employers in this state. And when we talk about maternity leave, or we talk about paid family leave of any nature, not just maternity leave, it can't be looked at in a vacuum. New York State, the census numbers came out yesterday. We continue to hemorrhage people. Our leading export is our population. And those numbers weren't broken down geographically, but I will bet my last dollar that the majority of those people leaving New York State are coming from upstate. So we already have a business climate where we pay among the highest property taxes in the country, among the highest income taxes. We are a third or fourth in the nation in workers' compensation costs. These are all things that make it difficult to do business in New York State, attract employers, and allow our existing ones to grow. And another mandate has to be looked at in the context of everything else employers are dealing with.
Okay, and finally, I've been in touch with Mike Durant from NFIB. He's traveling today. A lot of people are traveling, so couldn't be on the live program today. But he sent some materials about NFIB's concerns based on research in other states. And he pointed to Connecticut as one example. You know, Connecticut passed a law that I think took effect in 2012 on paid leave. And an early survey of businesses found that a good number of them were already expressing concerns just months into that program that to make it work, they would either stop hiring or reduce staff. Is that a red herring, or do you think that is a realistic concern in this state?
I think it is a realistic concern. There's a lot of unintended consequences with a proposal like this that often go undiscussed and not considered. When paid leave proposals have been put in place, and this is particularly burdensome on small employers that don't have large HR departments and don't have staffing resources that large employers often do, when you have to fill that leave time from an employee who's taking that leave, you often have to do so using overtime costs, so you're paying the employees filling that time more. You often have to do so through employer placement services that can have an additional cost. So there are very real costs that employers have to deal with, and the easiest way for them to manage those costs will be to limit hiring in the future or cut services or increase prices. I mean, those are the things that they will have to deal with that obviously are concerning to them and the viability of their businesses.
All right, that's Greg Brilla, the executive director of Unshackle Upstate. In a moment, I'm going to get Amy Collins' reaction to some of what you just heard, but I'm going to grab a phone call. And if you want to call the program, you can do that, 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255. What kind of leave did you get when a child was born? And what should it be? Keith, first up. Go ahead, Keith.
Evan, interesting. I can tell what Unshackle New York is going to say when you just pose the question for them without speaking. But to me, this is a no-brainer. I mean, the most important time in your child's life, after 6 weeks, you got to figure out what the heck you're going to do for daycare. If you've ever been into an office that has a lot of women who have given birth, and this is not hyperbole. You hear the breast pumps running as you go by the offices with the doors closed. Why not just make it a mandatory payroll deduction, sort of like Social Security is? And figure out how much you need to fund it, say, for 8 months, 10 months. And if you ever have children, it's there for you to use it. It's not on the burden of the employers. And if you don't use it, it's just a tax that was paid and just gets into the general pool. I mean,
so you're saying federal level, Keith?
On a federal level. This is so absurd to hash this out when it makes common sense. And the irony is all these conservative pro-family people are always against this. You know, they want you barefoot, pregnant, and in the kitchen.
Okay. Well, Keith, thank you for the phone call. Let's just try to keep it civil. I understand the point that Keith's making. I think the point that Keith is making is if you want to say you're pro-family, support the family in a time of need when a child's born there. But I understand that point. Let's try to keep it a little more friendly than that. Amy Collins is here because we're talking about it on state level because it's not something that's going to happen on the national level. I mean, at least I don't think, Amy, there's anything I'm seeing that would ever indicate, or at least in any time soon, this happening on the national level, right?
There's a number of social issues that have been addressed state by state, and once a large majority of the states enact it, then the federal government steps in. That seems to be how things work in our society, and that seems to be how this is working.
Okay. Melissa just writes, Evan, I have to say that as a mother of two, I was embarrassed about what our family went through and the choices we had to make when my husband goes back to work, the pressure he was under every day after my child was born. Some of his colleagues seemed to indicate that if he wanted more than 48 hours off, he was not being loyal to the company. How does it feel for moms? This is embarrassing that we're still talking about it. That's from Melissa. And Amy is just nodding right along. I see the phone ringing. We'll get back to the phones in a second, but I do want to give Amy a chance to respond to some of what she heard from Greg Brilla. And if you're just joining us, Amy's the CEO of New Shelves Books, small employer, about 4 employees. So you're exactly the kind of employer that Greg and Unshackle Upstate are concerned about. And I understand. I mean, they're working to make sure people like you can thrive. And that's exactly what Unshackle wants to do. So he says, first of all, he doesn't like a one-size-fits-all approach to paid leave with no flexibility, especially no flexibility for small employers like you. He thinks maybe there should be carve-outs for businesses with fewer than 25 or 50 employees. No?
One-size-fits-all is not the ideal, but we need to move forward at this point. And we're not talking about setting something in stone. We're talking about a living document. Let's get started. Let's get the train moving. We'll build the track ahead of us as we're going, and we can absolutely make adjustments as we need to. I appreciate Greg's concern for small businesses, but a number of the points that he made, and a number of them were very salient, but there were a few that I'm afraid do not reflect me or any of the small businesses that I'm acquainted with. We are not concerned about fraud. We're not concerned about somebody taking off for 8 weeks to take care of their mother-in-law's aunt.
Yeah, he mentioned in-laws, uncles, aunts, and you're saying you're not hearing that that's part of this kind of a program.
In Rhode Island, which has this program, they only include spouses, domestic partners, siblings, and parents. And in New Jersey, it's only parental. In California, it's parental. New York is not suggesting that we do in-laws, cousins, or the like, nor are we suggesting that we should allow rampant overuse of this program. It will have the same policies in place as any other insurance program. There will need to be some documentation, quite a bit of it, actually.
Okay. And you heard from Marisa Lagos in California that even though relatively early in California's program, the results have been, you know, they haven't been as dire as some business leaders predicted in California. She also said it's a little onerous on just trying to understand what's available. And you know, she's a, not only a new mom, but she's pregnant with a second. And she said there's a lot of paperwork and a lot of confusion, too. So I imagine, Amy, one of the goals is to make this as efficient as possible.
It is. And as the California moves forward, New Jersey's feeling the exact same pinch. As they move forward, at least they have a program in place to help families while they're moving forward. They're not keeping us all shackled without any pay or any assistance while they figure it out. We don't have the luxury of decades to figure this out. Let's get moving.
All right. Sarah writes to us on Twitter and says, Evan, the cost of retraining a new employee, or training a new employee, I think is what she's saying. She says that the cost of retraining a new employee when someone quits because of kids should be a factor. It affects poor moms who have to work the most. What do you think, Amy?
I think that whether someone takes 8 weeks off and they need to have someone retrained to take their job for those 8 weeks, or if the person has to quit, either way, you're looking at training a new employee for a period of time. And wouldn't it be nice to have your loyal employee coming back? This is not just the right thing to do for society. It's the right thing to do as a business owner.
All right. And Christine in Canandaigua called off air. And I wish, Christine, I knew more about what you want to talk about. She just says she wants to hear more about paternity leave. Unfortunately, Christine, maybe what she's asking is, is paternity leave wrapped up into this paid leave bill?
It absolutely is. We are working very, very hard to make sure that men feel just as comfortable to take the same 12 weeks off that women do. And as your last emailer actually mentioned, quite often men are shamed into not taking any time off. While this bill absolutely will not cover the social structures and a number of the employer-based pressures that employees feel, it at least will help the financial ones.
As an employer, what have you done, Amy, to make sure your employees know that this would be available? That's your choice to make it available before any program gets passed on a state level. And I ask that because Marisa Lagos made clear in California, if you make less than $75,000, you're a lot less likely to take advantage of the program that passed by law. You know, they're not supposed to be able to discriminate against you if you simply take the time off that is due to you. And yet a lot of people feel like they can't, you know, for various reasons. What do you do as an employer to make sure that the message is sent that you're not risking your job?
My employees know that they get paid every week, whether they're working or not. We do not have a set vacation policy at New Shelves. The deal is, if you want to take or need to take some time off, you take it off. You get your salary every week. However, you work out with your coworkers and make sure that your job gets done. We need to work together as a team. I have not been in the situation, I'll be completely frank, where anyone's needed to take 12 weeks or more off. But people have needed to take several weeks off, and we have covered it. And all my employees know that because of the way we work things, they'll make up the work when they can, and I'll make up the pay when I can.
Okay. And so one of the questions I've seen this hour from various places is just, when we talk about paid leave, paid how much? So let's hit that point again. People were asking online, does it paid 100% of your wage or your salary?
It does not. No, it pays 55 to 60%. However, it's capped out right now at $170 through the disability program. And this bill does suggest that over the next 4 years, that grows up to just over $600. $600 as a version of a percentage of your salary as a cap. Right now, it's capped at $170.
Okay. And Christine from Canandaigua called back to add that if a person only has one caregiver, that caregiver should be allowed to take time off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, as I said, my partner is taking care of his elderly mother with Alzheimer's. He is the only one who's capable of doing that. He's the only family member in the state. He should be able to take time off to do that.
All right. We just got a couple of minutes left here. What happens next year, Amy? What are you watching for next when it comes to paid leave and your expectations, your hopes, anything that you'll be involved with going forward here?
The first week in February, we're all going to be going out to Albany. There is a huge rally that we are hoping we can get a number of people. And if you go to citizensaction.org, and you'll find out more about that, but if you're, and also paidfamilyleave.org. We also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/paidfamilyleavenewyorkny. And in February, we are hoping to convince, with this rally, to convince the rest of the Senate to move the bill forward, to actually move on this, to get the train moving. We will lay the tracks as we go.
When it comes to the response of the governor, for example, he has expressed the kind of support that so far shows up in short quotations or sound bites, but not the kind of real movement on this. And some, again, some like Unshackle Upstate have said, you know, okay, fine, status quo, that's good. Others have said they want to see more leadership. What are you seeing from the governor on this?
We're seeing that he can go as far as he can, and he's sticking to his own conscience. There are parts of this bill that not everyone's thrilled about. It is the best that we've got going, and it's a fantastic move forward. And as the governor gets to know the bill and gets to understand more of what we want to put in place, we're seeing more and more support.
Is there a concern that you have that the perfect will be the enemy of the good? I've heard you say several times this hour, you know there are parts that not everyone loves. It's not a perfect bill, but it's the best you have right now. And is there a concern in your mind that if we paralyze trying to lock down every little part of the bill that's not perfect, that nothing gets passed? Is that...
I didn't mean to say that it wasn't perfect or that it wasn't. I said there's parts that, or I meant to say there are parts that not everyone's happy with.
Okay.
We're never going to get complete consensus. And that moving forward legislatively, that's our job as leaders. Our job as leaders is to move forward and to do what's best for society despite the lack of consensus.
Okay. So some final thoughts here. And if you joined us late here, the business community is not necessarily a monolith, and we know that, but a lot of organizations that support businesses, NFIB, Unshackle Upstate, they have opposed this. We reached out to them, and we have some statements from them. We had a short interview recorded earlier with the executive director of Unshackle Upstate. Wish they could have been here for the hour. We will certainly come back, and I suspect January, February, March, when this is really cooking, we'll come back. We'll talk with everybody. We'll get everybody at the table when it's not 2 days to Christmas and everybody's traveling. But just 15 seconds, some final thoughts for the audience on this issue. Amy, go ahead.
Just wanted to remind everyone that this is an insurance program, not taxpayer-based, and that moving forward as a society, it's time for us to join the rest of the world. This is what the entire world is working towards, and we should be the leaders, not the followers.
That point on insurance versus taxpayer-funded, is that the single biggest either hang-up or misconception that people have?
The biggest misconception that I know of. Yeah. They think that both businesses and taxpayers need to pay for it, and that's not what we're proposing.
All right, well, let's keep talking about it. We'll see you again soon because I know a lot's going on with us. Thanks for being here, Amy. Amy Collins has been here for the hour. She is the CEO of New Shelves Books here in Rochester. Our thanks to Greg Barilla from Unshackle Upstate and all of the questions that came in online. Joining us here on this Wednesday, a couple days to Christmas. We're going to be back here on the program on Monday. Hope you have a great holiday if you celebrate, and we will talk with you on Monday.